Hello, this is Andrea with Smart Money Chicks. Welcome to our Lunch Money podcast series. Today we have with us Kelly C. Long, financial coach and CPA. Growing up, the rule in Kelly's household was that if you wanted a car, you had to buy it yourself and pay for the insurance. Through babysitting and her first job at a fast food restaurant, she scrimped and saved bills in a glass Christmas jar that she kept on her bookshelf. On her 16th birthday, she proudly purchased a beat-up Ford Tempo that she later named Shirley Tempo. This experience laid the foundation for her ability to understand the basics of money at a very early age. Her career experience built on this foundation, and now she looks to share her knowledge, money attitudes, and life philosophies with the world through her coaching practice. As a personal finance expert, Kelly is frequently quoted in the press, including articles by CNN Money, Time.com, MSN Money, and CreditCards.com. Kelly regularly writes and speaks on topics relating to women and money. You can find her at her website, KellyCLong.com. That's KelleyCLong.com. Welcome, Kelly. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Andrea. I'm excited to be here.
I love it. Now, we noticed that you have a special, kind of a specialty with women and money. Would you care to share with us a little bit why women is maybe a little your main focus?
Certainly. Most of the reward that I found in my previous corporate career came not from working with the people who controlled the money in the family when I worked with wealthy families, which tended to be the husbands, but came from the time that I ever happened to have private time with the wife, and she was finally able to say, I don't know what the heck is even going on, but I don't want to ask because I don't want to seem dumb.
Right.
And so I spent a lot of time kind of on the sly, I guess. This sounds all fishy woo-woo, but when I worked at a larger bank, I was a part of a team, and so very rarely did I ever meet with a client on my own. And more often than not, it was me and four other men meeting with the client and perhaps their wife. And so the rare opportunity that I had to sit down alone with a wife was always some of my favorite time because I could make her feel more comfortable about being clueless and then make her feel a little bit more educated and empowered. And so when I decided to go out on my own, it was from that connection and reward that I found. I wanted to focus on that rather than trying to appease some of the different ways men approach money in general, much differently than women. And being a woman myself, I found that that's just my sweet spot.
Well, we love that, especially here at Smart Money Chicks, and it makes complete sense. So we're glad that that is kind of your specialty, so that really, really works out for us. So it's spring time, and one of the things that we always tend to contend with during the spring, it's time for spring cleaning. And when it comes to, like, our financial statements and paperwork and kind of clutter, we're not really sure what to do with it. So can you tell us how long do I need to keep things like an ATM receipt or bank statements or any other financial paperwork?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot. And even in my own household, I've had to change some habits with my partner because he tends to keep everything. And the thing is, with these days, with online banking and everything being stored electronically, in general, you can find up to 3 years' worth of statements online with your bank. You really don't need to keep your ATM receipts, particularly beyond making sure the transaction cleared the account. If you withdrew money from the ATM, you don't even need to really print a receipt unless, like, if you're like me, where I then go home and make a note of it to make sure I don't overdraw my account. But if you make a deposit at the ATM, make sure that you see that deposit hit your account, and then you can shred your receipt. There's no reason to keep those types of things. Bank statements, on the other hand, it tends to be a little bit more of a it depends. I personally save at least 3 years' worth of bank statements, although I don't keep them all in my office at the same time. I keep those because, as a small business owner, sometimes I spend my own money on my business, and I reimburse myself out of the business, and so those are kind of tax records for me. And were I to be audited by the IRS, it would save me a lot of time and hassle for them and typically they'll request at least 3 years worth of state financial statements from any account you have. So I keep up to 3 years of my bank statements. But once I receive an annual summary of any account, I actually will shred the previous monthly statements and just keep that annual summary if that particular account provides it. 401k statements are a similar thing. And as long as you are still employed with that company, you should hang on to at least the monthly statements and then the annual summary. Once you've actually left your job and hopefully you have consolidated, made your life easier by rolling that 401k over into an IRA, once the account is closed and you've separated from the employer, you can just dispose of all those statements. But then when it comes to an IRA, any paperwork that shows money that you contributed to your IRA, which would include the annual statement that your financial institution will send you, is called Form 5498, showing any contributions. That's a forever document.
Got it.
And particularly if, I know, it gets all confusing. So we have a tendency, I have a tendency, and my sweetheart has a tendency to, when in doubt, keep it. And so I've done quite a bit of research to kind of cut down on the paper clutter. But the reason you want to keep those IRA documents is when you start receiving money from that IRA, which could be 30, 40, 50 years down the road, depending on your age, if you ever had made contributions to that account that were post-tax, so you already paid income taxes on them, you're going to want that document because you don't want to pay double income taxes on it, and you have to have that form to prove it 20 years down the road. So those things I file away kind of by year. Some of the other things that we receive from investment accounts, so let's say when you left your last job, you rolled your 401k over into Vanguard.com, and then Vanguard sends you the prospectus for all of the investments that you chose. I actually recycle those because I can always find those online or request another copy. They're required by law to send them to all of their account holders for our own information. And if you ever did have questions about some of the fees and how the funds are run, that's found in there. But there's no reason to hang on to all that paperwork.
Well,
those are some of the things that can clutter us up.
Yeah, that actually, I'm glad you said that because I think I do have, I'm a part of an investment club, a women's only investment club, and we have been receiving, you know, before we'd received prospectuses and things like that for the stocks that we have, and more recently they said, okay, well, we're going to a computer-based system because we can send you these items at any time. So we're going to send it to you one time, and from now on you'll have, you know, access to it online unless you want a paper, you know, in it being paper-based, and then we'll send it to you. So I completely understand that.
And that reminds me of one other thing that tends to clutter my files. I had this huge, thick file for years called Home Warranties. And it was, I kept the little book from every toaster, hand mixer, up to the vacuum cleaner and the refrigerator. I kept that in the file along with the receipt, should I ever have a warranty claim. And it turns out that most of those types of paperwork, you don't really need to hang on to. I mean, you need to show your proof of purchase, and you would want to know how long the warranty is. But if you had a problem with, say, your brand-new refrigerator, you just had the receipt, you wouldn't need the paperwork that came in the box with it. On the other hand, certain things, like I bought a watch at Target once. I had a 5-year warranty, and I found the warranty in my files after 3 years, and I thought to myself, if this watch did break, am I really going to go to all the trouble to mail it in and make a claim on the warranty? It was like a $10 watch. So think about those things, whether or not you even need to maintain those files. And likewise, the user manuals that show you how to use the thing, I don't keep those either. If for some reason I forget how to use it or if I have a problem, those things are now all online at the retail, either the retailers or the manufacturers provide those for you. So I don't clutter up my files at all with user manuals or any warranties for small purchases.
I am so glad you said that. There's a drawer waiting for me at home that I'll have to clear out now because I probably have manuals for appliances I probably don't even have anymore. So thank you for that. So now that
absolutely,
we know, you know, how long we need to keep these items, What should we do with all these files, especially if we don't have room for them, say, if, you know, we don't have room for them, say, in our office or, you know, a place in our home? What do you suggest that we do with these?
Well, as part of your spring cleaning process, go through the files that I mentioned for the things that you would want to keep. So take those annual investment statements or bank statements. If you don't get the annuals, take the monthlies and staple them all together and label them by the year. And I stick them all in a file folder, and I label it Financial Documents 2010. And then I have a banker's box in my storage unit because I don't have a basement, but a basement would suffice just as fine, just as well. And I stick those in there. And in there goes anything that would have happened during that year that was significant. So in 2010, I actually sold my car. And so I have the copy of the title and all the documents related to the sale and evidence of who bought it and how much I received and how much I and then the stuff I still had from the original purchase of the car should anything ever come back, for whatever reason. And I stuck that in that file for 2010 too, because I'm probably always going to remember that I sold my car in 2010. So if I ever needed anything having to do with my 2002 Saturn Ion, I just go to 2010's file. I need to rewind real quick because I forgot about monthly bills, and those are huge clutter. And for bills like your water, heat, gas, cable, there is no need to keep a bill after you have verified that it's been paid. So if you paid your March cell phone bill on March 18th and you've already received the bill that's due on April 18th and it shows that you paid that March bill, shred it. Get rid of it. You do not need it. Unless you have a home office or it's a business expense, then you need to save it because it becomes a tax document. But I even put my tax returns and all of my business receipts and everything in that file for the year. And then it's just a compact. You can fit up to 10 or 20 years in a banker's box if you're really diligent about cleaning out and keeping up with that system.
That's a really great system to keep it by year, because as opposed to keeping it by month or just having it all over the place.
By type.
Yeah.
Or by type. You know, you tend to go, okay, well, I'm going to make a file for my pets and all their vet bills and such. And you know, I don't need to keep everything, but I do want to keep record of the shots that they've had or whatever. And I just throw it all in there.
I like that. That's a really, really great tip. So, since we're talking about kind of like the utility bills, what would be a great system to make sure that all of my bills are paid each month, as opposed to kind of, you know, letting them go? Because sometimes you have a stack of open mail and it's just sitting there and you may miss a date, an important date. And I know that definitely happens with so much clutter around if you're one of those people.
Well, the first step in getting that system in place is knowing what your monthly bills are. And oftentimes I have to start with my clients where we have to sit down and make a list of everything that you pay, whether or not you sit down and write a check or you go to the website and click a button or if it's automatically charged to your checking account or even a credit card that you pay off every month. I like to make a list of every single one of those bills, their approximate amount and what their due date is. And in general, you'll find that if you have a job that you pay twice a month, your bills tend to fall within, for me, they've always fallen within 50-50, so about half fall in the first half of the month and the half fall in the second half of the month. And sometimes you can control that certain, I know Verizon lets me pick my payment date within 7 days, and so there's some flexibility, or you can request that your car payment come out later in the month than earlier to shift it. But you need to know what your bills are, and then designate a time, either once a month or every other week, that you sit down and just click through that list and make sure that you receive the bill, take a quick look to make sure it looks right, and pay it. And to make sure that, to kind of manage that as it's coming in, because a lot of people go, okay, you know, oh, I got that bill in the mail today, throw it in the pile, and when I get to that pile, I know I need to pay that bill, but then something happens and life gets crazy and suddenly it's at the bottom of the pile under Oprah magazine, which is way more enticing to read before you get to the
right.
Next thing in the pile, right?
Yeah.
So make a file, label bills, and when a bill comes in, just throw it in that file, and you know you need to make a plan, you know, write it on your calendar if that's what it comes down to at least monthly sit down and open the bills and make sure they're paid. So for me, it's always been a matter of doing that the day after I get paid from work. Then I know there's money in my account. I pay all my bills right then, and then anything that's left over is spending money.
Wow. Okay.
So
and
it's kind of an accidental budgeting too.
Yeah, definitely. And it definitely seems like a really, really good system that's easy to implement. And I know I've always suggested sometimes people feel like all their bills come at the first of the month. And I know you've probably suggested this too, is to see if you can maybe move some of those bills so your due date is, you know, in the middle of the month. Like you said, Verizon lets you kind of pick a date within, you know, a certain time mm-hmm. period. It doesn't hurt to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of the things that you get in the mail are financial related, but they don't require any action. So I actually like to keep a second file. So there's the to be paid or to be addressed file, and then there's the to be filed file. So if you want to get beyond financial stuff, if you've got kids that are in elementary school and they've, you know, it's field trip time and they're coming home throwing permission slips at you left and right, you can train your kids or teach them requests that they put that in the to be addressed or to be paid file so that that is your urgent file. And then for certain things, like once you've paid that bill and you want to put it away to verify that it's been paid, you can put it in the to be filed folder. And then when you have time or when you're chatting on the phone with your mom, you can kind of just mindlessly start putting those things where they need to go. And that really reduces some of the clutter.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really good to start them early, and then because then they'll kind of learn as they're growing up too. Kind of like you learned as a kid, you know, you knew if you wanted to buy a car, you had to pay for it. So it kind of sets the terms.
Right.
That works in both ways. So a lot of times this may seem really daunting. I mean, we may have room for, you know, we may have a room or a shelf that we do not even look at because we have mm-hmm. stuff there. Do you have any tips on how we should get started?
Well, honestly, I would just get started on starting the system today with what's coming in. So don't wait until you have time to address that giant pile before you put the system in place. So just start working that system with making a to-be-paid file and stick it on your desk or wherever, you know, by the door or wherever is convenient for you in the kitchen or wherever you pay bills, and just start getting into that habit right away. And then as time goes by, start to attack that pile a little bit and you'll knowing what you need to keep and what you don't need to keep. Obviously, you want to take a quick look through there to make sure there aren't any bills that need to be paid. But I think that starting the project of getting the past kind of wrapped up can hold people from moving into the present and taking care of what's coming. And so my advice is definitely just get started today on, from here on out, practice that system and deal with not practicing it when you have time.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I can understand how people do not want to attack something because it seems like it's so big, but starting right where you are, that is really great advice. So you have provided us a lot of information, really, really good information, things that we can take, that we can do now. So we have one more question before we go. What are two or three tips or things that we should be doing now to improve our overall financial situation, because we know that, you know, this is actually what you do for a living. So it's not just dealing with clutter. We would love to hear what your suggestions are, kind of your advice is overall.
Oh, that's a loaded question. to keep it simple, my kind of going back to my comment earlier about when you get paid, sitting down and paying all your bills, and then you've got the leftover money. Anytime, and this was the habit that I started with my Christmas tree jar, was anytime I got money, I sat down and figured out what I needed to spend money on, and the leftover was a decision for what I wanted to spend money on. And my advice is that's the only time you're ever going to find extra money to start putting away for that rainy day or retirement or that great trip or the new house or whatever your thing is that you think you really want, and it's going to make your life great, but you just never seem to be able to get there. And So whether that's instituting a habit where you pay all your bills, you know, the day you get paid, and then the leftover money you automatically take $20 or $30 and put it in a savings account. Start today with saving just a little tiny bit of money on a regular basis and put it somewhere where you're not going to touch it. So that might be a savings account. It might be a brokerage account where you have to call another person and ask them to move money back to you for you to have access to it. If you have an online savings account that's attached to your checking account, it can be almost too easy to tap that money. Mm-hmm. My mom keeps it in her underwear drawer and a sock. I mean, everybody has their own place that they put that at that savings, but I think don't wait until you feel financially comfortable to at least try to put away a little tiny bit of money. So that's kind of my first tip. We have all heard the getting out of debt as soon as possible, and debt is bad, but we all deal with it in some way. I still have student loans that I don't know why I'm still paying them. I've been out of school for more than 10 years. I mean, I know why, but geez, oh, peace. But really focusing on while you're paying off your debt, try not to add to it. And that's one of the reasons you want to start with that small little savings. If you're really living on a shoestring and you're trying to pay off debt, the smallest unexpected expense can set you back 3 or 4 months. So putting a little bit of money aside can cushion against that and then help you to do everything you can not to continue to add to your debt. And pretty soon you'll see progress in paying it down, and that's encouraging. And then it's just like weight loss or an exercise program. When you start to see results, it tends to be encouraging to keep going. So those are kind of like basic financial health tips that I have. There's the whole retirement savings, start early. If you start saving at the age of 20 versus 35, you the same amount of money each month, you'll have more than double your money. I definitely advocate that, particularly if you have an employer who provides a 401k account and they match any money that you put in. I would at least put what they're matching into the plan. So that's just free money.
Yeah.
And that's compensation. When your employer is taking your salary into consideration, they're considering that they could be giving also 3% of that to you for free.
Yeah, so that's like kind of leaving money on the table if you're not contributing to it. So
absolutely. And usually if let's say your employer will match 6% and you're not contributing to anything, suddenly taking a 6% hit on your salary can be kind of tragic. So start small. Start with 1%. And every month or every 2 months, just add 1%. Get used to it. And then you'll never know that the money is gone. And before you know it, you'll have a nice little retirement account.
Yeah, wow. Well, thank you so much, Kelly. Is there anything, I know that we can find you on your website, and then you also have a Twitter account, so that's listed on this post, so you can find her website as well as her Twitter account, and you work with clients all over the country, is that correct?
I do. I have a couple clients that I've actually never met. We have strictly a phone and email relationship. So we do monthly phone calls and goal setting and email communications. I do texting. So it doesn't have to be face-to-face.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Once again, this is Andrea with Smart Money Chicks, our Lunch Money podcast series. Thanks for joining us.